From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Alan Brugler. He's at Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska. Jackie Bakes is out of the office this afternoon. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear all about how you can deploy solar energy on your farm as part of the farm's energy production, and you can also deploy it on your home. We'll do all of that, and we'll check in on the weather forecast, too. It's really cold out. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You know, just a reminder, though, I don't think you'll need any, that it's just bitterly cold out at this point. And this evening, it's going to stay that way. We'll drop all the way down to about 14, 15, 16 degrees below zero. And there will be a little wind out, so you'll need to make sure that you're aware of that. And we do have some snow in the offing, between 2 and 5 inches, so be aware of that one on Thursday during the day. Keep track of the animals that are outside. Make sure that you're bundled up. Try not to travel if you don't have to. But if you do have to, make sure that you've got everything in the vehicle that you need to stay warm in the case of an accident. Bitter cold temperatures can cause frostbite, these kinds of bitter cold temperatures at least, in just about 10 minutes or so. So make sure that you've got everything covered up as we make our way through some really serious cold over this time frame. As we look out, though, it does get a bit warmer by the time we get to Friday, and we'll go back up to 29 degrees, and Saturday a 42 degree high. Sunday, get this, 48, and on Monday, all the way to 57 degrees, potentially, right here in Urbana-Champaign. So we're looking at much warmer temperatures coming up, but right now, you need to stay bundled up as we make our way through this Wednesday afternoon and evening and into tomorrow on Thursday to make sure that you are safe.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
We're now joined by Alan Brugler. He's at Brugler Marketing and Management out of Omaha, Nebraska, though he, like me, is traveling this week, and he's in Dayton, Ohio. You're doing a two-day conference there, and you've got another one coming up, too. That's in Omaha. So when's the second one? When is the one that you'll be doing in Omaha?
Omaha one is Monday and Tuesday. That'd be February 4th and 5th at the Hilton Garden Inn West.
All right. So folks can probably get hold of you at Brugler Marketing Management, get themselves signed up if they want to visit with you there in Omaha. I want to visit with you just a little bit about the marketplace in general. As you take the whole of what's happened over the last several months into consideration, what are your thoughts going through 2019 for new crop sales of corn and soybeans?
Well, I think the market has had a hard time deciding what to do about it over the last month or two, simply because we don't have as much data as we normally are used to. So we're sitting there saying, okay, is old crop tighter than we last knew in December? And if so, does that tighten up the new crop probabilities enough that I shouldn't be selling here? And what we've done is we have what we call a technical fundamental forecast. It is a theoretical supply and demand. And then we look at all the futures data since 1980, and we index that to the USDA cash price averages, and presto changeo, you've got a projected high and low for next year based on your stock's usage forecast. Bottom line, corn, we think has a likely range for next year of 340 to 445, but that's contingent on acreage being only 2 or 3 million higher than what we had last year.
And do you have a number for soybeans?
We're assuming at this point 3 million acre cut, but we are assuming the yield will be over 50 bushels per acre national average. And that actually builds the ending stocks from what we have this year, which is already too much. And that puts our cash price around 825 to 835 average versus 860 this year. And it puts your high end of your futures range around just a smidgen over $10, and you would spend most of the year much in the eights and nines.
What kind of carryout did you use going into the 2019-2020 season for soybeans? Is it something close to what USDA has currently, or do you have something different?
Well, USDA didn't have anything for 1920.
Well, but at the carryout at the end of this year, though, going into that year.
Carry over. I'm using 885, so I'm down 70 or 80 million bushels from what USDA gave us back in December.
Oh, so you think usage will pick up. Why is that the case?
I think we'll get some improvement in export sales in the trail end of the year, whether that's from China as part of this negotiating strategy or simply because South American crops got a little smaller and Brazilian exports are down. You saw Albiovi this week lower their estimate for Brazilian exports for next year by 3 million tons. So that's part of that equation. We've got a little tighter ending stocks. I know that goes against some other folks saying exports are so slow that we've got to knock them down another 100 million and so forth. But yeah, I'm using 885 for ending stocks. And part of that is tied into an expectation the USDA will lower the production from last year slightly from what we had in December as well.
Yeah, so that number will be out next Friday on the 8th of February. Do you have an estimate of what that might look like?
Yeah, we're basically knocking about 4/10 of a bushel off of soybean yield. They probably won't show the yield, or I'm sorry, the export improvement that we're assuming. We probably won't get that 885 in the February 8th report. That's where we think it'll end up, not where we think they're going to go right now.
Yeah, I made that assumption that would be much further out, and there would have to be a policy change that in order to put some of that in place before we would ever see it. So USDA assumes until something different changes that the policy is trade tariffs are in place, and once that takes place they'll adjust.
Right. Exactly.
For the corn market, what kind of ending stocks are you working with for this year?
We're just right at one, a little over 1.7, so it's just down a little bit from what USDA gave us back in November, December, and it's because we are using a little bit lower yield. I think off the top of my head, I think we're 8/10 below what USDA gave us in their last NAS report.
Why do you come up with that number?
Basically, the slow harvest in the Western Corn Belt resulted in some more losses, down corn and that increased damage, that type of thing. It was more pronounced in the beans, but we did take a little bit off of the corn yield as well as off the bean yield.
So all of that should show, those things at least should show up or could show up in next week's, will show up in next week's USDA reports.
Yeah.
Whether they're your numbers or not, we'll have to wait and see, but they will show up next week. So as you look forward there, the wheat seedings report is due out too. What do you think acreage will show?
Well, we were originally expecting a 2 million acre increase. That was the intentions. But of course, the planting was delayed due to the fall weather. The trade average guess has it actually being down from a year ago. And I think we're down about 100,000 acres on winter wheat from last year. We are anticipating an increase of 2 million or more in spring wheat, however. That won't be in this report, but that's our all wheat figure for next year is higher.
Anything on usage that you've been watching that troubles you or gives you some hope for the future other than in Chinese exports or imports of U.S. soybeans?
Well, China's the big attention grabber, and it's the big number. I mean, the potential swing number. But I think we also have to remember that we've got trade negotiations underway with Japan and with the EU, and I think a couple other ones as well. So there's potential to open up markets. The NAFTA situation obviously is of some concern that we actually get the USMCA or whatever the current name of it is passed by Congress. But I'm optimistic that as we go forward that we'll get some of these trade deals resolved. I'm very concerned on going back to wheat. I'm very concerned that if we don't get a new deal with Japan, that we will lose business to Canada and Australia because of the TPP. They went ahead and signed the TPP. They're getting lower tariff access to Japan, and we're still at the old high tariff.
Right. Livestock-wise, anything that you're worried about?
Worried about would be if we had ASF come to the U.S. And I've had this discussion with a lot of nervous hog producers. Right now we've got a very, very strong export program for pork that would be screwed up if ASF is found here. I think we are expanding still in the livestock sector. Grain consuming animal units are an all time high. The one thing that concerns me a little bit on the cattle side is simply where we are in the cattle cycle. All right. We're likely topping the cattle cycle if we haven't already turned it. Whenever USDA gets the January inventory report out, we'll get a better handle on that. But if we have topped it out, then what happens in that first year after is all the heifers that were going to the cow herd start going to the feedlot, and you suddenly increase your supply of animals going into the feedlot. And that's typically put some pressure on the finished cattle prices as work their way through the system.
Hey, thanks, Alan. Alan Brugler is with Brugler Marketing and Management, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. Do visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you can pick up your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook, just $30. That's Tuesday, the 30th day of March, the All-Day Ag Outlook. Don't miss it. Well, you know, if you follow the news very much, whether that's national news or even local news, you probably run across an article, two, maybe a story on the local news about solar energy and capturing solar energy. Maybe you understand a lot of that, maybe you don't, but one of the people that does is Emma Gilmore. She's with Straight Up Solar. They're out of Bloomington, Illinois, and I ran into her yesterday at the Pork Expo in Springfield. She now joins us to talk a little bit about why she's here. That's an interesting function in itself. And then we'll maybe talk about houses and much larger solar fields, too. So thank you so much for being here. How long has Straight Up Solar been around?
Straight Up Solar has been around for 13 years, serving the Central Illinois and Southern Illinois and St. Louis region. So, yeah, we've installed, I think, over 1,400 systems in that time, residential, commercial, agricultural. We're now getting into the community solar market as well. Of course, community solar is just the next thing on the horizon. So,
tell me why you're here at the Pork Expo in Springfield.
So we're here at the Pork Expo in Springfield to reach out to pork producers and those who are associated with the pork producers industry. We actually have several systems that have been installed by us at hog farms around the state. I've got one just south of Springfield. We've got some in western Illinois. But really, we serve ag producers all throughout the state of Illinois with engineering, procurement, and construction services for solar electric systems, solar panels on your roof or on the ground.
Why is it that a hog farm, a hog barn probably in particular, would be interested in solar? That seems an odd pairing.
Right. So hog farmers, like any industry, use electricity, use energy in their business. And the nice thing about solar energy is it allows you to take control of your energy costs. You can make a cost that may be variable year to year into something that, you know, when you purchase a solar energy system, you are effectively purchasing the value of that solar energy for the next 25 plus years. That's the lifetime of the solar panel system. So of the solar panels themselves, I should say. And so when you take control of your energy costs in that way, it's a smart business decision many times. You know, you can make use of financing through your local bank or through the USDA. You can really achieve a great return on investment or IRR through a solar energy system for your farm. Takes up, you know, as much space as you know, you want to offset with electricity through solar. If you're a hog farmer and you have, you know, roof space or ground space, this is a great option for you. If you are someone who doesn't have space at your site, you can also think about getting into the next thing on the horizon. We were just talking about community solar. You can actually subscribe and offset some of your electricity in that way too. And so, yeah, there are also really great incentives. There's a 30% federal tax credit that is at the full 30% until the end of 2019, and that starts to step down. It's an incentive that's on its way to sunset in the future, and that's a federal tax credit. And then you can also make use of a state incentive called through the Illinois Shines program. Through the state of Illinois, it's solar renewable energy credits. Basically, they're giving you... well, you can enroll in this program and you may be eligible for an incentive that will help offset the cost to install the solar energy system. And through enrolling in that incentive program, you may also be able to contribute to, you know, the development of local solar throughout the state. So something we can all get behind from an environmental angle as well. Business owners in particular have access to special incentives for solar energy, bonus depreciation. And there's also potential for USDA grants through the USDA Rural Energy for America grant program. That's another 25% of the system cost, up to 25%, I should say.
So when you talk about the return on investment of the total cost, and I'm going to assume that you put many of these offsets in, but how long does it take to pay for a solar system?
Oh, for a commercial venture, you know, we... when I was talking about the incentives just now, you think about the last couple on that list there, the bonus depreciation and the USDA Rural Energy for America program. Those are available to commercial entities. So if you're a business, you can really make this return on investment happen fast for your solar system purchase. It can be under 5 years, you know, as little as 2 years even. So that's a pretty incredible return on investment for an energy efficiency essentially investment for your farm, you know. For homeowners, it's more in the range of 6 to 10 years payback for their solar system after incentives have been realized, after energy savings has been realized.
So that's in the large scheme of things. If you're going to upgrade your home, it pays for itself really quickly.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And the concept is the same, very similar for homeowners, I should say. You know, when you look at your electric bills throughout the year, I don't know if you have electric heat in the winter. That's another factor to think of. But in the summer, you surely have some AC bills. If you're like most of us who run our AC in the summer to keep cool, any electricity that you're using throughout the year, you know, it can be a variable amount that you're going to spend on your next bill. So when you install a solar array, it really helps you cut into that monthly cost. To heat, sometimes if you have electric heat, or cool your home, run all the, you know, electrical appliances in your home. Again, just helps you take control of your own energy expenses.
Do you size the system so it's sized right for the house or the business, or does it produce more energy than is needed and that goes back into the grid?
You typically want to size the system according to how much you're using in the home or business, and you also want to factor in how much available space you have at the home or business. Or, you know, nonprofits and government facilities can get into solar too. It's just a little bit of a different situation there as far as the financial considerations. But yeah, those are the two main factors, how much electricity you're using throughout the year and each month. We want to look at, you know, your usage curve throughout the year. And then we want to look at your available space. And when we can match those two things up, we can also, you know, take a look at different configurations of how we might design and install the system. And that's what we're looking for ultimately, is the best return on investment for that solar design at your site.
How have solar panels changed in the last decade, if at all?
Well, the cost of solar panels did come down. So it's 2019 now. So we're going from 2009 to 2019. I would say from 2000 and... Well, so over the past decade, the cost of solar panels had come down, I would say, 70% over the last 10 years. More recently, the cost of solar panels has leveled out. That's due to, you know, efficiencies in manufacturing as well as just trade throughout the world. There are more people producing solar panels. Now, the cost is very much more affordable than it would have been several years ago. You know, we usually price solar panel systems per watt, cost per watt. So, you know, that's come down by several times throughout the past few years. Right now, the cost of components has come down so much that what we're working on really is the soft cost. So the soft cost of the solar system would be the cost to find somebody who wants to install solar, you know, the cost of just doing business, the cost to do permits, that kind of thing. So that soft cost is the next thing that you'll start to see dropping as far as solar systems. The more solar systems come online, the more jurisdictions are familiar with how to permit them, and the more people hear about it and are, you know, proactively reaching out and trying to find ways to go solar. So it'll, you know, continue to bring down the cost a little bit. But really right now, with the combination of available incentives, 30% federal tax credit and the state incentive, this is probably the best time to go solar that we've seen in a long time.
Hey, thanks so much, Emma. Emma Gilmore is with Straight Up Solar. You can find out more at straightupsolar.com.
Let's check the weather forecast now. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated is here. Drew?
South America farmers have had a real tough month of January, but it looks like conditions are going to start improving as we go forward through this next couple of weeks. The changes will begin in parts of Brazil as we get to the end of this weekend and on into next week. The changes there will likely include an increase in precipitation across the center south and center west portions of the country, where it has been drier bias most of this month. The rain should be timely enough to improve the outlook for second season corn and late season soybeans. And it looks like there will be a chance that we'll see some of the other crops like rice and sugarcane, citrus and coffee all will improve as well. The precipitation increases begin this weekend, but most likely will be significant next week and into the middle of February. During that time period, we will see frequent rain and thunderstorms from Mato Grosso down into Goiás and portions of Minas Gerais, as well as São Paulo and Paraná. There will still be some concern over dry, biased conditions, though, in both the northeast and southwest corners of the nation. Some of those areas have been exceptionally dry for quite a while, and they may get a chance for a few showers and thunderstorms over this transitional period during this next week or two, but they will keep their below average bias on the precipitation totals for the next couple of weeks. Temperatures in Brazil will continue to be seasonably warm, so when it's not raining, there will be a fairly quick rate of drying across the country. Now, Argentina is also expected to encounter a change in its weather. Argentina has not had any shortages of moisture. It's quite the opposite. The country has been dealing with frequent heavy rain events that have been separated by several days of dry weather, which has really helped them in a big way. Many areas, though, have saturated soil, and the ground is excessively wet in some cases, and flooding has occurred periodically. The most serious of the flooding has been in the northeast part of the country, and that occurred early in January. Since then, the heavier rains have been occurring more in the heart of their corn and soybean production region, and it looks like that area will get a nice break coming up here next week. The last of the series of storm systems is now underway in central Argentina, and by the time we get to the late weekend and most of next week, they will be seeing a dry and warm biased pattern for at least a little while. Both Brazil and Argentina should see a relatively better month of February in general relative to that of January. And in the United States, of course, we're dealing with the bitter cold conditions that have dominated the past couple of days from the northern plains lines into the heart of the Midwest. All of this is about to change as we go through the end of this week and the weekend with a significant turnaround in the temperature regime, with a much warmer scenario expected to play out this weekend into next week. When we make the transition, there will be quite a bit of wind blowing across the country once again, and that's going to cause some extreme wind chills initially, but as the warming takes place, that will become less and less of an issue. This morning, there was a good chance for some winter kill to have possibly impacted some of the lower Midwest soft red wheat, and there may have also been a couple of pockets in Nebraska that might also have suffered a little damage from the extreme cold. Temperatures in these areas were in the negative and positive single digits with little to no snow on the ground, which is a recipe for some damage. However, with the crops being as hardened as they have been from previous bouts of cold weather, the odds are fairly high that the crop most likely survived this bout of cold without too much in the way of adverse impact. But we won't really know until we get to spring, and at that time when the crop starts to green up, we'll have our first indication as to whether or not there were any losses. But there's always the potential the crop will go ahead and green up and still not produce well, so we really won't have the bottom line to the impact of this cold weather until we get to the end of this growing season. But at this point in time, I really doubt seriously that there was a lot of loss, just simply because there was very little green up out there in the crop and it had been sufficiently hardened. In the rest of the world, the only other area of interest at the moment, it seems like, is Australia. That heat wave that's been going on for 5 weeks has eased up considerably. The temperatures are still warmer than usual there, though, and it may be a while before they see normal temperatures again. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.